to Rebel Radio Podcast, and this is Jay Muse. Snooch to the nooch. Go there and do it.
Happy New Year, Matt.
Happy New Year.
This is our first episode of 2023. It's like every year the years go by, and I think, man, we're like, 2000 was cool in 2010, and it's like, we're in the future, baby.
That's right. The future is here.
But I'm also waiting for like in Back to the Future 2, where he goes in the future and he sees Jaws 17, the shark comes out like it's going to fucking bite him.
Yeah.
Where's that 3D at, you know?
It's not here yet.
I know. It's like, man, so the movies lied to us. They made it sound like, but at least we're not taking the shits and using seashells, you know?
That's right. We're not using seashells and we're not, having to go underground for a rat burger.
That's right.
If we want a burger.
So, you know, but it is a new year and it's a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. And we are going to have a good year, man. I think we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to reach 350 episodes. We took a couple weeks off and I think it was good for me, man. I feel a bit rejuvenated. And I hope you
That's right, man. Yeah. Every once in a while you need to take a break and then come back to it fresh, inspired, you know, and ready to roll, baby.
Well, like last weekend, we didn't do a show for New Year's, and I end up having a little bit of COVID, and I'm fine. It wasn't too bad for me the second time I had it, and so I'm sitting around like Friday and Saturday night, like fuck, man, we're not doing a show. This sucks because I couldn't like drink or do anything for New Year's, I wanted to do a show, but we didn't do a show. But that's okay, you know. Yeah. I still don't mind the break either. So now I'm ready to go, and it's gonna be fun, man. We've got our April theme month coming up. We've got, we'll probably do some sort of panel or show at Comic Palooza this year again, our 350th episode. When, we'll hit that. We'll hit some milestones. We'll hit some good movies. And you know, just like when you think you run out of movies, there's still lots we haven't done. And we've got some cool stuff planned this year. Maybe some surprises that people might not expect, and maybe some they do expect. And by all means, man, follow us on all social media, Facebook, Twitter, all that good stuff. All the links are up at the website, therebelradio.podcast.com. We will always take suggestions. We've got a Facebook group, which I'm going to try to really start pushing that Facebook group a lot more. Me and Matt both going to post more in it this year and be more interactive with you guys. And if there's a movie you want us to see, then maybe we'll do it. But don't fucking ask us to do Steel Magnolias because I'm not doing some shit like that.
Yeah. And stuff that we can, you know, actually see, you know, these, you know, not Superman 4 with Nicolas Cage or whatever.
Right.
You know, we would have loved to see that, but there's just no way for us to review something like
Superman
that.
Superman Lives.
Yeah. Superman Lives.
That would have been crazy to see Nicolas Cage. Ah, man, I often, you know, I mean, I'm sure you've seen the pictures online of him in the costume and stuff. And I often wonder, like, just how that would have turned out. You know, Tim Burton wanted to film that in Houston. He wanted Houston to be Metropolis.
Wow.
That was one of his ideas at the time. And it was to film it here because he liked the cityscape. And just bizarre to think how that would have turned out. But no, it's Nicolas Cage. We have some Nicolas Cage stuff in the news today. So bear with us. You know, it's our first episode of the new year. We're kind of remixing things up a little bit. We're not changing the show that you love, and we're not changing anything like that. We're just going to, we'll just tell you, you got to wait towards the last part of the show for the featured movie from now on. So the featured movie, it will be the main event, so to speak, as we're going to go over everything we've watched lately. We're going to talk some news and some fun stuff. We'll get to the feature film in just a bit. And Matt, I did see a movie while I was on vacation that you talked about our last show. And I took the kids and I went and saw Avatar, The Way of Water.
There we go.
And I enjoyed it quite a bit. If I had one beef with it, we spent an hour in the first film building Pandora in the forest. And well, let's spend an hour building the water world. And that part of the movie was a little slow. That's probably my only beef with it. It was like,
We're
going to spend another hour building another world. And it's beautiful and it's well shot. And the 3D is amazing. And James Cameron pulls eye candy into your eyes like no one else does. But I just felt like, oh my God, this part of the middle part of the movie drug. But And that's why I wonder how it will replay when you rewatch it. Cause like in 3D, it's amazing. You're sitting there, you're buying into it. But when you watch that without 3D at home, that middle part of the movie is going to be a little bit like, you know, come on now. But that said, I thoroughly appreciated the story where with Jake protecting his family. And I'm not going to spoil anything because I know people still haven't seen it. I'm going to, the tech of James Cameron's world continues to be mind blowing. It's funny. I read an interesting statement about how Cameron, who seems to be so anti, you know, there's hidden messages in these Avatar films about the environment, yeah, about the use of technology and stuff, right? But Cameron's not preachy about it. He's not pushy about it. But at the same time, he also uses the same tech to make this amazing looking world. You know?
Yeah.
So he kind of contradicts himself, I guess. But he's allowed to do that when you're James Cameron. But the tech of the film is amazing. I love the use of the mechs and the different tools they use by the humans and stuff. I think it's really cool. The different ships, just the interesting way they brought back the colonel was different. You know, kind of,
yeah.
You know, he kind of retconned his own story a little bit. Did you notice that at the beginning of the movie, James Cameron was like, how do I get the colonel back? Oh, I'm just going to kind of retcon things and say that the humans have been working on Avatar projects all these years. Yep. I was like, oh, just isn't that in convenient? You know, that's mighty convenient. You know, but overall, man, it's a beautiful film. The 3D, it was cool. Taking my kids, Wyatt, I don't think he had seen a movie in 3D before. So he's sitting a couple of seats over and there was lots of, whoa, oh, eh, oh, that's cool. He thought the 3D was really awesome. So it was appreciated to watch it through his little young eyes and see how amazed he was by some of the looks of the film.
It's a majestic looking film. I mean,
it's well shot. The CGI is amazing. I mean, I'm sitting there watching it. Like, it's hard to tell what's real and what's not. I mean, it's pretty fucking flawless, man. The way that he put this film together, it's a nice looking movie, you know,
very smooth.
Yeah. And the first one is good. And this one is just even maybe better tech wise. It's just so smooth looking. It's well acted. I have to give credit to Sam Worthington and Zoe Saldana and Stephen Lang, because their performances, Sigourney Weaver, you know, their performances come through even with the motion capture and the CGI work and stuff. And they do a hell of a good job doing that. Some really great action sequences. I mean, the finale of this film, that last 45 minutes is breathtaking.
Really, you're on the edge of your seat trying to figure out what's going to happen. A very, very tense scene at the end.
Yeah, and just really good stuff, man. I'm looking forward to the third one. Yeah, I guess he's going to introduce fire people in the third one. So hopefully we don't spend another hour establishing fire people.
Yeah, you know, in a desert world or something.
Yeah. What if they do they hinted at a desert world, because at the beginning of this one, we see the humans' basis of operations is kind of out in the desert in the middle of nowhere. So that's kind of like the joke I made in the text message the other day. I was like, oh, are we going to get a human world, you know, and stuff. So we'll see where that leads. But I enjoyed it, man. It's making a lot of money. You know, they were worried it wouldn't break even to make its money back, but it looks like it's well on its way to doing that. $1.5 billion worldwide. It's number one worldwide for 2022. Probably not going to quite reach Top Gun domestically. It may teeter out before then, but still highly successful movie from James Cameron. I think my only beef with Cameron doing Avatar films, honestly, is because it's probably the only kind of films he'll do the rest of his career. We'll never get that True Lies sequel now. We'll probably never get him do another Terminator film. And that's a bit disappointing because he's such a talented filmmaker. I would have liked to have seen him revisit some of his other franchises. But if he makes two or three more Avatar films, his legacy is sealed. That's what he's doing. He's making his version of Star Wars, his version of a legacy science fiction franchise that he wants to do, and that's okay.
That makes sense.
But Avatar, The Way of Water is in theaters now, man. Go see it. It's don't wait for Disney Plus. I think this is a movie that you were right, Matt. It was worth seeing in 3D, man. It was the 3D popped. It was really, really beautiful in parts. How about the flying arm at the screen? That was cool.
Oh yeah. That was cool.
My even Wyatt was like, whoa, his arm flew off.
Yep.
So, you know, so non-contact spoiler there, but, you know.
Yeah.
So that was cool. I know you and me both watched a movie this week too, man, Glass Onion.
Yes.
A Knives Out Mystery. I'll let you go first on this one, man. I don't know. I have my thoughts on it.
Yeah. You know, I felt like they definitely beefed up the cast a little bit more. I feel like, you had a little bit more notoriety with, Norton and, yeah, I always forget her name, chick from the Skeleton Key.
From what?
The blonde from the Skeleton.
Oh, Kate Hudson.
Kate Hudson. Yeah. And then, the girl that's, she's up and coming. She's on a Netflix show and she was in Stranger Things. She has like the love affair going on with Edward Norton. And of course, Dave Bautista, who is just kind of dumb in the movie a little bit. and then you've got, of course, Daniel Craig comes back. But I felt like it was kind of hard for me to follow, a little bit more. I felt like I followed Knives Out, the first one very well. And I, you know, I was engaged, you know, I felt like it wasn't trying to be too obscure, and it all came to a head at the end. This one, I feel like it's kind of juggles around a little bit, and you kind of get, you know, some intriguing stuff here or there, and then all of a sudden at the end, it all comes together, you know, and then it, you know, that's the part that's probably the coolest, the ending. All the explosions everywhere and Edward Norton losing his mind and all of that. But Craig is great in it. And it's still a fun film to watch, you know, still enjoyed it, but yeah, that's how I felt about it. I felt like maybe it could have been a little bit more consistent, like the first one was.
Yeah, I agree on a lot of that. Craig is great. The cast overall is great. It starts out wonky. You're absolutely right. It's like, wait, what's going on here? Then there's a twist within the twist in the movie where, like, halfway through, we find out that the one girl – semi-spoilers here, but the one girl is the sister of the other girl, and she's working with Craig. You don't know that until about halfway through. But that's when the movie kind of picks up, when you find that out. You're like, okay, the middle part of the movie is great. But then I did not like the ending. I thought it was childish, her destroying everything. It's like, this is stupid. It turns out – who the killer actually was. I was like, it felt very convenient to me. I'm like, okay, I kind of figured that out from the beginning. I had this idea. Like, why is this rich guy going to have this murder mystery thing go on and throw a party? I was like, they were painting him from the beginning to kind of be the killer. So you kind of like, if you really pay attention. So I felt some of that was a bit lazy.
And the gotcha moment was just really, you know, obvious. It's no fun, you know,
but I still enjoyed it. I think it's worth watching.
Yeah.
And, it's funny that you mentioned Dave Bautista being kind of dumb in the movie, because he gave an interview with Variety this week and the headlines made it sound like he didn't appreciate being Drax, which is ridiculous, because if you read the interview, that's not what he said. He said he doesn't want Drax to be his only legacy, that he wants to be known as an actor, not just a wrestler. But he said you read the article, he says, I did appreciate what Marvel has given to me and that it's turned my career around he appreciates Drax, and that he wants to play more serious and better characters, but then he plays kind of a dumb guy in Knives Out.
Yeah,
he does. So he was like, you know, and he's played a lot of movies where he's been the brute guy already, you know, in Riddick and a few other things. So unfortunately, his size and his stature, he's going to probably get roles like that. And it's up to him if he wants to take him or not.
Yeah.
I don't think he's any better than The Rock, maybe a little bit. I can see how Bautista actually can act some, but in the serious movies he's been in, like Spectre and Blade Runner 2049, his parts are so small that he hasn't really had a chance to really do much more. I think this movie with Rian Johnson's the most he's given him to do in Knives Out, you know. And I do think that Bautista can be good and have a really good career. I mean, but let's be honest, him or The Rock, none of these guys are going to probably win Oscars, you know.
Yeah, neither one.
Oh, excuse me for coughing today. But Knives Out was fun, man. You know, I I really like Craig in the role, and I know Netflix bought a 2-picture deal, so there's one more coming, at least, you know, and Craig and them are going to come back, and apparently they're going to start shooting fairly soon, as early as possibly this summer for at least sometime in 24. So,
nice.
I think, you know, it's good films, man. And, those are the two big movies I watched while we were on vacation. Well, not vacation, but off for a couple weeks from the show. And dude, have you downloaded the Tubi app, man? It's like the best free app possible.
Yeah.
There's like,
they got some cool movies streaming there.
Weird 80s anime. Like,
oh yeah.
This movie called Wicked City, man. Talk about friend of the show, Rob. Talk about tentacle porn. Like there's tentacles all up in this girl, man. And if my nephew Asen's listening, don't repeat any of this stuff right now. But yeah. Wicked City is nothing but violence and titties. I mean, that's the whole movie. It's classic 80s anime. But it's a fun watch. It was kind of cool. It's about like these demon creatures that live within the city at night, and they come out and they have this peace agreement with the humans, and all of a sudden they're breaking the peace agreement. So this detective has to find out what's going on, and these demons like to get naked a lot and seduce people. And so, you know, my kind of entertainment.
And, it's like, we're going to tentacle you.
Yeah. And then I watched that, and I watched a show called Goku Midnight Eye about a detective. And it's weird as shit too, man. It's like, it's 2 episodes. I guess it was done as a mini series or something in Japan. And I couldn't find much information on it. And, man, there's like this naked stripper chick who's like part motorcycle, part girl, and
her, weird.
It's bizarre, man. And he's like, and he has like this. The Goku has this like mechanical eye and this super stick that he gets that helps him like hack into things. And it's just like whoever wrote this stuff in the '80s, man, this anime, they're drinking a lot of fucking sake or on drugs or something, because it's some bizarre, weird shit they come up with, man.
A lot of sake.
Yeah, it's like, but if you're interested, Tubi it's full of a lot of old school anime on there. I've noticed that, and a lot of great cartoons, man. I've been watching like old G.I. Joe and Transformers on there. It's a hell of a cool free app, man. I really
like it. The last movie I watched on there was The Rundown. I saw The Rundown was on there, and I said, man, I was like, I kind of want to watch that thing again, because I remember the opening scene where he's trying to be respectful. And he's like, I got to fight a bunch of NFL players. And it was fun watching him. And, you know, of course, I think I mentioned to you before last year, Arnold's at the beginning of that film. And he's basically like, he tells him good luck. Like he's, you know, some people claim that he was trying to pass the torch at that point to The Rock as like the next, you know, action hero.
Right. And I remember yeah, man. No, the app is cool, man. One thing I like about it for a free app, man, its ads load quickly. And it might have 4 ads, but they go by fast. I mean, it runs smoother than some of these paid apps. Like Paramount Plus is terrible with their ads. You know, like they run slow. They take forever to load. Hulu's not so bad. But Hulu, man, they used to not do ads in between the films. Now they do ads in the movies. You know, the other day, I did rewatch Prey when I was off because And man, the first time I watched Prey when it premiered, there were no ads near it, only at the beginning. Now, like halfway through, I mean, I think it only stopped once for ads, but there are ads near it now. I'm like, when did Hulu start that shit? They used to do their movies ad free.
You have to buy premium Hulu.
It's like, no, I don't use Hulu enough to pay for premium. I mean, I only watch something like if it's like Prey or something I want to watch. Hell, the only reason I fucking have Hulu is because it's part of my Disney bundle. You know, otherwise, I probably wouldn't even have it. You know, it comes with Disney Plus and ESPN Plus, and ESPN Plus is a joke. It's like, have you ever logged into it? You know, you log into it and like you have ESPN, right? And you have ESPN Plus. But if the game is on ESPN, you can't watch on ESPN Plus because you can't watch it on ESPN if you don't have a TV provider. So what's the point in ESPN Plus?
It's like, what a joke. There is no point.
I think I've been able to watch one game on ESPN Plus since I had it. But most of the time you can't even access the games. It's like, this is stupid. Now, if you're like a big hockey or soccer fan, I think it looks like ESPN Plus is the app for you, because like all that stuff you can access. But I don't know. The streaming wars of the 21st century.
Yeah.
That's what it is. I mean, you know. And but man, that's kind of what I anything else you've been watching while we were off?
Yeah, I messaged you in case you wanted to take a peek at my booth.
Oh, yeah. I probably will watch that eventually.
Yeah, I watched Violent Night with David Arbor, and I feel like it's, it was decent. I do think that I'll watch it again. It's not my favorite Christmas movie, but it's different. John Leguizamo is off his rocker in that movie. There's a lot of, like nods to Home Alone. There's booby traps in there. So I really think that's cool in there. And a little girl who sets them. And of course, Arbor is Santa Claus, and, he is, he beats the shit out of a bunch of guys, uses a sledgehammer, grenades, guns, and Christmas magic. Yeah. Whatever he can get his hands on. So it's fun to watch. It's the same director that directed, I believe he directed Deadpool 2. I want to say it. I thought it was the same director from Deadpool 2. I need to look it up. I could be wrong. I might be shooting from the hip there. But it's a director I've seen before. I've seen his films before. Maybe it's not Deadpool 2. But the action's solid. Solid action. I'm not getting lost in the scenes where they just, change a bunch of angles and can't tell what the heck happened. You just see a guy falling on the floor and you're like, he got beat up.
Not Deadpool 2. This guy has directed the Dead Snow movies. Hansel and Gretel with Jeremy Renner is probably the most famous thing he's done.
What did I look up then? I don't know why I got that notion. Hansel and Gretel wasn't bad. It's okay. But it's got some, some character actors in there. Decent watch. Decent watch. I think it's fun. It's definitely not one you want to have the kids in the room for. I feel like just the language, this is just too much. And at parts, I'm like, do you really have to curse that much? It's, we can curse a little bit, but I feel like when you curse a lot, it may take away from the movie.
Does Tarantino movies offend you, Matt?
No. Tarantino is just like, because you expect it, in a Tarantino movie, and he's just a surgeon with it. He's very eloquent, and he puts it in the right spot. I feel like it's meant to be there, when Tarantino does it. But not every director is like Tarantino.
Right. No, I know what you mean.
Make that work. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But hey, whenever it goes on, whatever $3.99 rental or whatever like that, it's definitely a film, one should check out, and at least see a different type of Christmas movie, and one that's, will fill your, action appetite, when watching it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I probably will watch it. I just hadn't had a chance to yet. And, I just been a weird anime kick. The other anime I rewatched, one of Vudu's $5 sales, man. I grabbed the 4K version of Ghost in the Shell, man. One of my favorite animes of all time. Same and here. I owned it on Blu-ray already, but I was like, for $5, man, I'm going to get the 4K, man. And man, that's a beautiful transfer. It looks so nice on the TV. The 25th anniversary Blu-ray still had some fading to it. And like, it just looked a little rough, man. So I wanted the 4K transfer into, it looks really nice for a 1995 film, man. They did a good job with that. So I rewatched that, man. It's always one of my favorite animes of all time. I actually bought part two also. I haven't watched it yet because I've never seen the sequel, even though it's only sequel by name. I know Major, I think she only appears in it very briefly, if I remember right, in the sequel. So I'm going to try to watch that too. So I was like, I'm going to grab these while they're on sale.
Nice. Yeah, I took advantage of that sale too, man. I got that. And I got Buckaroo Banzai. I saw Buckaroo Banzai was like $5.99.
Yeah, I watched that one off too. But I always watch a lot of old stuff. I try to only talk about the newer stuff we watched.
Yeah,
I rewatched Buckaroo Banzai when I was off this week.
And then my Long would be proud. My son he was looking at Godzilla versus Kong. Jake, my oldest. And my youngest just kind of grabbed the controller and started pressing stuff. Ended up buying Godzilla versus Kong digitally, and I didn't realize I didn't have it, so I was just like, okay, well, we've got it now. Whatever.
But you can watch on HBO Max too. But I have a copy of it.
Forget what else. But yeah, Vudu, man, had a lot of $5 sales, $5.99, Ghost in the Shell was the coolest thing, I think, out of that. There wasn't a whole lot that I saw. There's some bundle deals, but I had already had that stuff already in my library.
Right.
Yeah, man. I think that's still going on, too. So if you want to take a peek at Voodoo, they've got some deals going on.
Yeah. There's some good stuff, man. All right, man. Well, so what's been happening in the world of pop culture since we've been out for a couple weeks? Well, the DC saga is still going on. James Gunn did say that they plan to announce the first film in his DC universe and what it's going to be here within this month sometime. So news is coming of what the first film is going to be. There's a lot of rumors going that his universe may not include the big three, which is Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, which is strange because he said he was writing a young Superman film. So that's why I'm taking that as just a rumor, because even James Gunn, as much as he likes his quirky and his Suicide Squad type movies, he's not naive to think he can run a DC universe and not have Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman in it. Is he?
Yeah.
Like, you have to have the Holy Trinity.
You kind of have to.
I would think. To be successful. So we'll see what happens with this. And word is that he's also writing another TV series for HBO Max that's going to happen. He also confirmed that the Green Lantern series is not dead, even though people have heard it was dead, that's still in the works. So I'm starting to wonder. And then the rumor is that they may bring Ezra Miller back for more Flash movies because the Flash is testing well. So I'm really starting to wonder if this announcement of the first movie as universe is the Flash movie and they're going to work around it, because you can easily reboot things with a time travel element of the Flash.
Yeah.
So I'm really starting to get that vibe. Like, they're going to make guess what? Our first movie is the Flash. And they're going to build off of that. Because if you're Warner Brothers and you have the Flash and Aquaman coming out this year and Shazam, you want them to be successful. And you don't want them to just be throwaways for a pre-existing universe. So I have a feeling there's going to be some sort of workaround where those three characters still exist in this new DC universe. So we'll see how that all plays out. And on that note, we're just a few weeks away from our first full-blown Flash trailer. I know we had the DC Fandom teaser a couple of years ago, but Super Bowl Sunday on February 12th, we're going to get the first full trailer for the Flash. I'm pretty excited to see this, man. I'm trying to keep my hype up for it because I feel like we talked about a couple of weeks ago, like, man, it's hard to get excited for these movies if they don't mean anything, but I want to be excited about seeing Michael Keaton back in the Batman costume.
Yeah. That's the most exciting thing.
Seeing a Flash movie, seeing Michael Shannon come back as Zod in this movie. I'm curious how it's all going to play out. So I'm trying to keep my hype level up for it. And hopefully the Flash, is good. Netflix, man, finally. Matt, did you watch Wednesday yet? Did you ever start watching it?
I have not, but Jackie has.
Man, she watched good, it. Man.
I heard they canceled it. Did they cancel it?
No, they finally announced season two was coming. All rumors. There were rumors that Netflix wasn't sure and Tim Burton, they were going to shop at the Amazon or somewhere else, but they finally came out this week and said, nope, we're doing season two. So
there we go.
So that's good news for fans of that show. I really enjoyed it a lot. I went into it with no expectations and walked away from my living room and I blew through 8 episodes within 4 or 5 days, which is rare for me to do with a show. So I really enjoyed it. I think you would dig it, man. You'll like it.
I've seen clips and I think I'd like it. I just need to find time to sit down and dedicate to it.
Yeah. Michael Giacchino, I may be saying his name wrong, who of course is best known for scoring films, and he directed the Werewolf by Night special and scored the Batman last year. He's going to make his feature film debut with a remake of a movie that we covered on this show. That is the classic radioactive ant thriller, Them.
Yes.
So they're going to do a big budget Them monster movie, and Michael Giacchino is going to direct it. That's a genre that I think is ripe for a Hollywood comeback. We just talked a little bit about Godzilla. I think giant monster movies should be a thing, man. I really do. I want to see more of them.
I think you can do more. You find movies that were made in like the 50s and the 60s they were in black and white. They didn't have a whole lot of, a whole lot of technology at their hands, at their disposal to really make a film, pop like it should when you've got big monsters in there and a call for high graphics. So making a movie, you know, just rebooting a movie like that is, it makes sense.
Yeah, you can still play off the radioactive scares of the 1950s. You can still do things like that with today's environments of the world and things. And but man, I think that we're ripe for those kind of movies. I'm kind of excited. I don't know how Giacchino will do as a director. He's known for composing films. Werewolf by Night was fun, but we'll see, man. I mean, he's obviously got a lot of film experience, and I hope his Them turns out well. Did you watch the trailer for Renfield, this Nicolas Cage movie?
Yes.
Where he plays Dracula.
What's funny is I watched the, that's probably the only new movie trailer that I watched. And it's odd looking to me.
It's odd. It's ridiculous. Weird.
Yeah.
It looks weird, but it's like, I want to freaking watch it. It's like, you know, it's like Nicolas Cage. I mean, he's, there's no secret that he's poked fun at himself the last few years. And having fun with it. He's at a comfortable place in his career that he can enjoy doing this stuff and what he's doing. And, but this feels like, he's kind of had a little comeback with massive talent last year with that movie. And, and this looks like another one in that right direction for a little comeback for him. And, you know, he's been circling the idea of appearing in Face Off 2 and things like that. So, but it just looks ridiculously fun. Nicholas Holt, plays, I guess, his understudy in this film. And he's just like he's all over the place with it. So we'll see. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, we'll see how it turns out.
We're about 10 days or so from The Last of Us hitting HBO Max. And the producers or the showrunners who came out and said, you know, they were upfront about this. Don't expect this to be more than two, maybe three seasons. They're telling the story of the games. They're going to have definitive endings. And that's it. They said this is not going to be a Walking Dead thing that runs 10, 11 years, that they're here to tell a good story. And they said the first season covers pretty much all the first game. They said there's some elements, I guess, that might trickle into the second season. But I kind of like that. I like when shows are a little upfront and say, hey, we're going to tell the story. It's going to be 5 years. That's it. You know, sometimes these shows, because as a viewer, you can commit to it knowing, hey, I'm going to get 20 episodes of the show. It's going to tell a complete story, and I'm going to be hopefully satisfied when it's all said and done. I don't have to wait around or commit to something for 10 years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no,
I'm super excited for that show, man. I can't wait.
It looks fun.
Yeah, I will be tuned in on January 15th watching The Last of Us.
Same here.
Disney, man, they are working on this feels like one of those things that should have already been done. But Disney's putting together a Stan Lee documentary. You know, Stan would have been 100 back about a few weeks ago if he had been still alive. And there's lots of information out there about Stan Lee. There's been some mini documentaries, things like that done about him. But Disney plans on doing the definitive Stan Lee documentary. And if you've watched any of the Disney docs that have showed up on Disney Plus in the last 2 years, most of them are fantastic. So I have no doubt that Disney will do a wonderful job with a really great Stan Lee documentary. No word on when it's going to come out, but it's in the works. And the last bit of news I have for us is this new Evil Dead movie called Evil Dead Rise is coming out. And it has a new trailer. And I guess some people were a little like, wait, what is this Evil Dead movie? Where's Ash? And is it a sequel to the remake that came out a few years ago? And apparently the answer to that is there is no Ash. And no, it's not a sequel. It's like its own thing. But takes place in the Evil Dead universe is from what I'm understanding. And apparently there will be nods to possibly the existence of Ash's universe in this film. But because I remember reading a couple years ago, I thought they were doing a sequel of the remake, but now I'm reading that this isn't really a sequel. It's kind of its own deal. So
very interesting.
I know you're a big fan of that franchise.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember going to Alamo Drafthouse and seeing the remake and, you know, getting to see some of Sam Raimi's interviews, and they would literally like go sleep. You know, they'd sleep in like gymnasium floors on gymnasium school floors, and you know, they got lucky because there was one time that this one town they were going to go shoot in. You know, this girl liked Bruce Campbell a lot, and so they kind of used Bruce Campbell to get access to her apartment, so they had a place to sleep for the night, and yeah, every you know, film, you know, avenue in America said, no, this is too violent. This is, you know, Evil Dead's too out there, too much violence, too scary. And he goes to Switzerland, and man, the Swiss love it. It becomes a hit, and boom, he catches lightning in a bottle, and the rest is history. You know, now he's directing Marvel films again. So, and you can definitely tell what his style is. You know, I love seeing that. You know, the way he has the camera, you know, sneak up on the cabin and zoom in on and creep up on the victim or, you know, a certain thing and highlight it that way. I think it's his signature. It's and I love it. Love watching his film. So, you know, excited for a new installment, and we'll see how this goes. You know, hopefully we have a groovy baby, you know, thing in there. Give me some sugar.
Yeah, I know. I just wish they would have done the Army of Darkness sequel, but it looks like that's never going to happen.
Yeah, man. So. It's always too little, too late, right?
Yeah. Because that is one movie in the franchise I do enjoy. That one I really like a lot, but oh well. All right, man. It's almost featured film time, but, you know, as we do every month, we're going to do it early this month, man. We always tell you what's happened this month in pop culture history. And Matt always brings us to the show, man. He does a good job with it. Matt, what have you got for us for the month of January?
Yeah. So January is such a slow month in film, but I was able to find some cool stuff. 93 in this month, 30 years ago, Robert Rodriguez's El Mariachi debuts at the Toronto Film Festival and became the lowest budget film that ever reached $1 million.
Yep.
So, and that's film
amazing.
Yeah, echoed here. You know,
amazing debut film. Have you ever actually seen it, the original?
I thought we reviewed it.
No, we did Desperado, the sequel. We've never done the original.
I remember starting to watch it. I don't ever think I finished it.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch. I mean, it's definitely low budget. You can tell when the gun hits the ground, it's made of wood and things like that. But it's definitely worth watching. I mean, especially as a Robert Rodriguez fan, it's worth checking out and appreciating. And, man, it's an incredible debut film considering how he made it. Sometimes I find his, you know, at that time it was like Kevin Smith came out with Clerks and Richard Linklater was making independent films with like Dazed and Confused and things like that. And then, and then you have Robert Rodriguez come out with El Mariachi, and his is probably the most impressive of all the debuts just because the way he was able to pull off that film with very little money. And it's an action film. The difference in that and Clerks is basically a bunch of people standing around. Yeah, it's a cool independent film, but there's no special effects. There's nothing really that had to be done to make the film look good. Where the things Robert Rodriguez had to do to pull off the action in El Mariachi are pretty amazing. So give it a watch, man.
Yeah, especially with low budget. But yeah, and in 1966, Batman starring Adam West as Batman, Burt Ward as Robin, and Cesar Romero as the Joker debuts on ABC. 1966, man. Yeah, well, I know we've touched base on that film.
Oh yeah, one of the best comic book iterations ever made still to this day. I mean, just classic all time. Grew up watching it. Maybe not as influential to me at my age as Batman the Animated Series was, but I still remember being a kid, and that was my first version of seeing Batman, and I probably thought it was pretty dorky at the time, but funny. And I had no idea that a dark Batman would exist in the future. But you know, the coolest thing about when you go back and watch reruns of that Batman show is like they're having a lot of fun making the show, and it comes out on every episode how much fun they were having. And maybe there was a lot of LSD and stuff involved. Who knows? It was the 1960s, but they had fun on screen.
They sure did. 1977, on this day, we don't talk a whole lot about Golden Globes, but this one's a film that I really like. Rocky, in 1977, won Golden Globes at the 34th Golden Globes.
Yeah, Rocky, man, that's one of the best sports movies ever made, man. I personally prefer the sequel, as we know, because I did it for my birthday movie a couple years ago. I just like something I like about the underdog bounce back story, but I really appreciate Rocky a lot, man. And just talk about another basically independent film, man. Stallone had to shop it. He had to convince people to let him make it, and he's really good in the movie. You know, it's funny, people are talking about how good Stallone is in the Tulsa King and say, oh man, I didn't know Sylvester Stallone can act, man. Yeah, Stallone has always been more than just a tough guy. You know, he kind of sold himself to Hollywood and kind of became that action star, but the guy could act too, man, if he really put his chops to it. I mean, he can do it, and Rocky shows that.
I got a wrestling one in here. 1991, Sergeant Slaughter defeats Ultimate Warrior to get to win the championship belt. So I always thought that, you know, cool whenever we can work in a wrestling fact for old Frank and Long, if Long is listening.
Yeah. Yeah. They are the wrestling guys. Frank still believes it's all real.
He does. That's a fact. Also like to work in birthdays. It's always fun to work in birthdays. I haven't done it in a while. James Earl Jones, 91 years old. Keep 91. That man alive. Yeah, man.
Voice of Darth Vader.
Yes. Jim Carrey, he's 60. Really? Man, we're getting old, man. 60 years old.
Damn.
Jim Carrey. Costner, I know you're Yellowstone guy. Costner, 67 years old, man.
Oh, man. Not just Yellowstone. Man. I'm always a big Kevin Costner fan, man. I love his movies. I mean,
Silverado. Very good. Silverado, man.
Open Silverado. Range.
Yeah.
I mean, Field of Dreams. Just a guy I don't know. I always appreciate the stuff Costner did. He just feels like a good movie star on screen.
Yeah. He's always made good movies. Mm-hmm. I thought this was a cool fact. So in 1949, Shirley Temple was huge. Apparently she had issues, of course, having attempted kidnappings or, you know, people harassing her, stuff like that. So I guess she befriended the FBI and in particularly J. Edgar Hoover. So in 1949, J. Edgar Hoover gave her a tear gas fountain pen. And I think that it was in case she needed to make a quick escape. But what bewilders me is in 1950, they had like cool spy ass, you know, tech such as a tear gas fountain pen at that time. What kind of cool stuff do you think they have now?
It's like James Bond shit, man.
Yes, man. They were making James Bond shit in 1950. So I'm like, I wonder what kind of cool shit that they have now, man. You know,
no that kid, stuff from right?
John Wick is probably true. They probably have bulletproof suits or and stuff like that.
Yeah. The old underground world of assassins.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And last but certainly not least, ending on a somber note, on this month in 2008, we lost Heath Ledger. So
I saw that. And that was his anniversary came up. I mean, but some great performances from him as the Joker in The Dark Knight, Lords of Dogtown.
Yep.
You know, going too soon, that's for sure.
That's for damn sure.
All right, man. Good stuff, Matt. Good stuff, man. All right. Well, let's get into today's feature film, the moment that people have been waiting for. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they have.
Maybe they haven't. Yeah.
This is a movie that I knew nothing about. I was my extent of anime in the early 2000s, late 90s was, you know, like I mentioned, Ghost in the Shell, Akira, Appleseed, some things, the more popular stuff. You know, I had not really become familiar yet with Miyazaki films. You know, I kind of knew who he was, but I wasn't, I hadn't really seen any of them because they weren't real easily accessible, you know, and Spirited Away was one of the first big of his films to get a major U.S. theatrical release because it did really well overseas. It was one of the first movies ever in Japan that made $200 million U.S. money and overseas. So they decided to give it a big American release, and Disney helped release it in theaters here. And so our former co-host Frank was like, "Hey man, you know, you got to go see this movie with me." And I was like, "Man, that looks like a kid movie, man." I was like, "I don't want to go see it." But I went with him and I walked out of the theater being very surprised about how good this movie is. In fact, it's a movie that I've revisited quite often over the years. I mean, I've seen this, you know, 10, 20 times since, you know, just it's an absolutely beautiful picture. Matt, I'm gonna let you summarize, this movie, while I go check on a noise in the back of the house real quick.
Yeah. Not a problem. So, you know, we touch on, Chichiro and her parents. They're moving to a small Japanese town in the countryside. And, on the way to her new home, her dad makes a wrong turn. And it's a one-lane road, dead ends into a tunnel, and her parents stop the car and kind of look around the area. And they go through the tunnel, find an abandoned amusement park. Now, on the other side, it's a little town. And, you know, they find a restaurant with no staff. And she refuses to eat and goes to explore the theme park a little bit more. Finds Haku and tells her about, talks to him a little bit and says her parents are in danger. Got to leave immediately. She runs back into the restaurant, and her parents have turned into pigs. And theme park turns out to be inhabited by demons and spirits and evil gods. And at the center of the town, there's a bathhouse where the creatures go to relax, and that's where the really wacky stuff happens. And the owner, Yubaba, is intent on keeping all the trespassers, which she is, she's viewed as a trespasser, to keep her as a captive worker. So she's trying to save her parents and has to return and get out of this crazy place, is basically what it's about.
Mm. When was the first time you saw this?
I saw it. I was one time at band camp. We had the summer trip that we went to.
You didn't stick any flutes anywhere, did you?
No, we did not. but one of the girls was really into anime, more so than me. And she's like, "Hey, have you ever seen Spirited Away? It's great." And this is like in 06, 07, mm-hmm. I think it was. And
a few years after it came out. Yeah.
A few years after it came out. And I was like, no, she's, "Oh my God, you gotta see this." And so I watched it and I think this is the first Miyazaki film I saw, or at least, enjoyed.
Realize you saw.
Yeah. Realized I saw. And it's really cool. I mean, the bathhouse scene, that demon, the black cloaked demon that comes in there is just nuts. And it was kind of freaky, but yet it was kind of like it's like an uplifting animation too. So very, very unique style. The clash of the story and the demon and mm-hmm. how the artistry is actually depicted and drawn and stuff. Very, very neat. But yeah, saw it just a few years after it came out. Wasn't too late to it. And, thought it was really cool. Mm-hmm. Just definitely different from the anime you watch when you get home and you turn on Toonami and you watch Trigun, right. You watch Dragon Ball Z, Yu Yu Hakusho. But it's just different. Different story, different kind of arcs.
And Miyazaki has talked about his influences and how Disney has influenced him a lot. And his films have this sense of wonder to them where they play out like, especially Spirited Away, they play out like a Disney movie, but with anime influences, mm-hmm. big headed characters, dragons, otherworldly things going on. And the most interesting concept I find is he doesn't really script all his films. He storyboards his films and he creates the story as he goes along, which is amazing to think that he's able to come up with these incredible stories. I'm sure somewhere he's got to have a outline jotted down, because you can't just come up with this stuff, even though he may not have full scripts. And Spirited Away kind of came together like that. Started out as a series of drawings that he turned into this spectacular film that I think ranks among some of the best animated films of all time. And you were talking about how you mentioned there's stuff that goes on in this film that's pretty intense and pretty scary. But you never feel completely afraid for the characters in his films. And I think it's because he does such an amazing job of keeping that sense of wonder, discovery, and sense of heroism in his films that, yeah, he might give the good guys a little bit of danger, but you never feel like anything's going to terribly happen to him because his worlds are so colorful. They're so bright. There are some dark moments in his movies. They're definitely a little darker than some Disney stuff. But yet ultimately he's telling children's stories and he knows that as a filmmaker. So he never lets his darkness go so scary that it's going to frighten you away from the joy and wonder of the film. And Spirited Away definitely is heavy on that, with these dark moments, but then a lot of bright moments too.
Yeah. And it's kind of in a coming of age kind of thing. He's able to combine these myths, from his own culture, and he's kind of like almost like a ghost story, you know, drawn influence from like ghost stories and stuff like that. And yet taking that and then, you know, taking like some, you know, a family story and, you know, and a coming of age journey and making it sort of uplifting, but then, like you said, introducing that touch of danger and, you know, being able to come full circle and have that happy ending where, your main characters are intact and nothing happens to the little girl. And you know, they're just barely able to escape danger. And, you just, the way he builds his worlds, you just wonder, you know, where he gets these, inspirations from, like you were talking about. And I thought I read something that he was going to retire, after he did Princess Mononoke, but then something, his daughter influenced him.
Friend's daughter
influenced him, to, you know, do this story. And, I thought that was cool because, you know, we would have never gotten this story.
No, it's definitely a coming of age film. And that's how I view Spirited Away, is that you watch this through the eyes of Kichiro, and it's seeing this world through her eyes as everything unfolds. And it's almost a sense, is it all really happening at times, because you're watching through her eyes and what she sees as she, and the amazing thing about her, she's drawn into this world. That's just, if you think about it, for a 10-year-old girl, this world is chaotic. There's spirits and dragons, and I'm getting put to work in a bathhouse. There's a guy with six arms and there's suit balls that are like barking at me. And
yeah,
but yet she never, like, she has this childlike wonder that she never takes it for granted. She's just like, oh, it is what it is. And it's amazing that the character, because as a child, she just accepts it, that this is what's going on. And she buys right into it because she knows that, you know, Aku tells her, like, if you want to get your parents back, you have to do everything I tell you. And she's 10 years old. She's like, oh, okay, I'm going to do whatever you tell me. And she buys right into it. So it absolutely is her journey as she tries to save her parents. And it's an amazing journey to go on with her. It's fun. It's one of those movies that, like, as an adult viewer, you watch this and you're just, you're right. The stuff that Miyazaki comes up with is just, it seems so simple, but yet so complex. You're like, wow, that's just a brilliant idea. And this movie has brilliant idea after brilliant idea throughout it, whether it's the animation or the things he comes up with in this bathhouse, the different spirits, like the scene where she tries to bathe the mud demon and all that. I mean, it's just incredibly animated in the way it all plays out. And it's just so well done.
And this movie, I guess on Ask Me Anything, Nicolas Cage came out and said that this was like one of his favorite anime films of all time. And just praised Studio Ghibli. So we've been referencing Nick Cage all day. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That he's a big fan.
And this movie is highly credited. It was one of the first anime films to win the Academy Award for Best Animated Film, or first foreign animated film. Yeah. You know, it's definitely credited for helping a new generation bring anime to the mainstream. Cause at this point there was some anime that had been in the mainstream. We talked about Ghost in the Shell and people knew about Akira and the popularity of Dragon Ball and Pokemon at this point, you know, television shows. But as far as other anime in theaters, Spirited Away was a big one. It had a wide release in the US. It did pretty well in theaters, getting nominated for awards. And it really opened up people to other Miyazaki films. I mean, Princess Mononoke saw a spike in sales and viewership after this. Yeah. It allowed for Ponyo to have a wide release just a few years later. And it opened up Disney to buying rights to more Studio Ghibli films and start releasing them on DVD and Blu-ray. And a lot of that is all credited to Spirited Away for having such a huge impact and getting his films out there to the world.
Yeah. And we're talking about his inspiration and, I guess he was cleansing a river, cleaning a river. And that was the inspiration of, cleansing of the river spirit, based on his incident where he was cleaning out a river and he removed a bicycle, from the river, among other things.
Oh, okay.
It's funny. He just goes out and does things. And he's like, oh, you know what? That's a movie.
Well, and I think that's what a great creator does. I mean, he sees his world. I mean, you know, we, George Lucas was influenced by watching old World War II films and Flash Gordon and stuff like that. And he took old World War II film, you know, news footage, and that's how he got the ideas for the X-Wings and all that. And you think about it, it's what like the great creators do, man. They see the world around them and they create from it. And they come up with these amazing, brilliant ideas. And Miyazaki is right up there, top notch, is one of the greatest creators of our time. And strangely, there's still people that aren't familiar with his films. And if you're a film buff, you should be, man. I mean, it's only the second time we've covered one of his movies. We did Princess Mononoke and now this. But you should be familiar with his films and you should watch them because they're not just animated films for kids. They can be for adults too. Every one of them has something spectacular in them and something you're going to find that you're going to appreciate in your life, I think, as an adult or a child and as a film fan.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And, man, this film, I didn't realize how much money it made. A lot. Yeah. The thing is, yeah, like over like really, really fast. It hit like 200 million, before it even hit the US. And I guess no other film had done that, before this. I always like to talk about how much a film makes. It's not always indicative of its success, but you know, on a film like this, it really is, you know, speaks to how popular it and how fast it gained popularity.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, no, it did very well. I said, I remember it had American theatrical release. That's where I saw it. And, no, you're right. It did very well. And it's continues to do well this day. I mean, it's on HBO Max. I mean, HBO Max has a right to a lot of the Studio Ghibli films, and it's shot in Studio Ghibli. It's not just the Miyazaki films. There's other films from that studio that are on there that are really well done. Grave of the Fireflies might be the best World War II film you'll ever watch. I mean, I'll warn you, get you a box of tissues when you watch it, but it's just an amazing film.
We've been talking about doing that film, and I haven't watched it yet.
It's hard to watch. I don't think it's actually on HBO Max. It was on there, but I think sometimes they rotate them, you know. But an amazing film. I mean, it's quite often. We talked about Vudu earlier. It's quite often $5 on Vudu. Maybe one day you should grab it and give it a watch.
Definitely.
I'm a little behind. I still have not watched The Wind Rises, which was his last theatrical film that he did a few years ago. I need to watch that one. But I have seen My Neighbor Totoro, which I like a lot. Howl's Moving Castle is a great film. Ponyo is a wonderful film. Ponyo is probably his most accessible for younger kids to watch too. And just a neat movie. I have not seen Kiki's Delivery Service. I need to watch that one, but I've seen most of his films.
Yeah.
But Spirited Away is amongst one of my favorite animated films of all time. I think it's an amazing movie. I enjoy, like I said, this is a movie I revisit pretty often. I mean, it's been out for 20 years. I probably watched it 15 to 20 times. I mean, so it's definitely something I watch pretty often. It's a feel good movie too. It's like, you just want to put something on the background and watch and know you're going to enjoy it. I mean, you can put Spirited Away on and just kind of sit back and just, you don't have to be in the living room constantly while it's on, but you can come into it and like, you know where you're at. And it's an amazing movie.
It's a movie that you may say other films have drawn inspiration from. I would say, you know, maybe Coco drew inspiration. You have a main character, a child who's lost in a world that they're not familiar with, an alternate world. You know, Coco's got skeletons all around him. She's got demons all around her. Mm. He's trying to get back to his family. She's trying to get back to hers and escape this world. Same for him, just for, you know, different ways. But, you know, we see that in a lot of films. You know, we talked about, we talked about Bullet and Michael Mann films, you know, great people, you know, like Studio Ghibli. Sorry, some congestion or something in my throat.
ball hair sack here.
Yeah, man. He's crazy. But yeah, you're Miyazaki. He's going to, he's going to be copied. He's going to get, you know, inspire people. And I think some of these animated films gain inspiration from stuff like this.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. You could argue Brave could have been influenced by something like Princess Mononoke. You know, but no, I would think that Disney is definitely influenced by his films, current Disney animators, as much as he was influenced by Disney films. You know, and now, and he's given a few interviews the last few years. He He's not saying he's officially retired. There's a lot of rumor that he's working on one more film. We'll see. Because he is up there in age, you know, I can imagine he wants to leave his legacy and enjoy retirement some. But so we'll see if he makes any more. And if he doesn't, man, I mean, he's between Spirited Away and My Neighbor Totoro and the films that he has done. I mean, he's one of our great filmmakers of all time. And the stuff his influences will go on for many, many years past this. I think one of the coolest things that I love about him is he's still doing traditional animation, which I think I appreciate the 3D stuff of today's world, you know, with the Pixar films, but I really like hand-drawn animation a lot. I still do. And I think that's why I still enjoy like the DC animated movies that come out, because they're hand-drawn and I like that style. And I hope it doesn't go away. And filmmakers like Miyazaki continue to keep it alive by doing hand-drawn animation. And I hope it stays around for a while.
Yeah, no, definitely. You can tell a difference.
Yeah, because then there's some movies. Oh, I forgot about this. I did watch Strange World, the new Disney movie. And this was a movie that when I saw the trailers, I was really looking forward to it. And it's kind of a dud. You know, it just wasn't that good. It feels like they kind of mailed it in. The trailers, the movie is not even like the trailers. Like, they sold it as like this nostalgic Flash Gordon-style 1950s science fiction movie. It really didn't feel like that at all. Just kind of disappointing. So, you know, they could have used some Miyazaki influence in that movie, you know, so to speak. I forgot that I did watch that. And the reason I think I forgot is because it just wasn't memorable. It was disappointing.
It bombed in theaters. And whenever something bombs as bad as it did.
Which is rare for a Disney film. You know, it doesn't happen very often. But Spirited Away is just incredible, incredible film. If I was to sit here and make a list of my favorite animated films of all time, this one's easily in my top five. Possibly, The Jungle Book's always going to be probably my favorite animated film of all time, but Spirited Away could be right there at number two easily. I mean, I love the original Jungle Book. It's one of my favorite films ever. But Spirited Away is right up there. Probably easily my favorite animated film of all time. I think it's such a great movie. Easily an A+. There's no doubt about that with this film.
Oh yeah, A+.
All-time classic, and just a good movie, man. If you've never seen it, take the time. If you go to HBO Max, take a couple hours, sit down, and go on this journey with Chihiro and the world she visits in Spirited Away, and you'll be happy. You'll thank us later, because this is a movie that you should watch and everyone should watch, because it's a really beautiful film, and you know, it's a good one. And we've got a good movie next week too. That we're going to talk about here for a minute in preview. And, it's a Spielberg film, starring Leonardo DiCaprio and, Tom Hanks. And, oh, and before I go on, did you see that they're going to do a new Bullitt movie? And they're not calling it a remake. They're just calling it kind of a reboot. They're not going to remake the original film. It's going to be like a new Bullitt story. And, word is that, you know, they might go after Leo to play the role.
Would be cool.
I can't remember who was attached to direct. I want to say it might be the director of John Wick. I could be wrong though. But yeah, so there's a Bullitt remake is apparently in the works. But Steven Spielberg, man, he directs this movie. It's based on a semi-true story. And the reason I say semi-true is because when this movie came out, it said it was inspired by true events. But in the last 20 years since this film came out, a lot more has came out about Frank Abagnale and whether his adventures were real or not. We'll talk about that next week. But the movie is Catch Me If You Can.
Welcome to Miami Mutual Bank. How may I help you?
I'd like to cash this check here, and then I'd like to take you out for a steak dinner.
Are you real?
I sure am, little lady.
The jump seat is open.
It's been a while since I've done this. Which one's the jump seat again?
Dr. Connors to the ER. Dr. Connors to the ER.
This is irrefutable evidence that the defendant is lying.
Special Agent Hanratty, FBI.
Hello, Carl.
You're gonna get caught. It's like Vegas. The house always wins.
Some nuts flying around the country posing as a pilot.
Call him the James Bond of the sky.
Hello, pusher.
This is by far the best date I have ever been on.
He's a kid. That's why he doesn't have a record.
30 milligrams of codeine every 4 hours. Do you concur?
I concur.
Dr. Harris.
Yes?
Do you concur?
Concur with what, sir?
Ma'am, I'm sorry to have to tell you, your son is fudging checks.
I have a payroll check here I'd like to cash.
I'm working part-time at the church now. Just tell me how much he owes and I'll pay you back.
$1.3 million.
I'll be choosing 8 young ladies to be a part of Pan Am's future stewardess program.
South America, Australia, Singapore. These are so perfect, the bankers even know the difference. What do you want?
To apologize.
You didn't call to apologize, did you? You have no one else to call. I'm looking for your son.
I would never give up my son.
If you were a father, you'd know.
Stop chasing me.
I can't stop. It's my job.
You see these people staring at you? They keep peeking over their shoulders, wondering, where are you going tonight? Where are you going, Frank?
Don't tell me not to fly. I've simply got to. If someone takes a spill, it's me and not you. Don't bring around a cloud of terrain on my parade.
Sir, we're going to let him get away.
No, Carl, you let him get away.
Nobody had a better parade on my
Merry Christmas!
Parade.
I'm getting close, huh? You will go to prison.
You're going to have to catch me.
This is just a fun movie. It really is. It's a solid film with Leo and Tom Hanks playing the detective, based on the story of Frank Abagnale, who is believed to, or it's Abagnale. It's hard to say his last name.
Abagnale.
But he's believed to, basically forge his life, whether it was his career as an airline pilot or airline steward and, other things, and made lots of money off it over the years, ended up going to jail for it. And then in recent years and books he's written and other stories, it seems like maybe some of it wasn't as true as he said. but we'll talk about that next week. But the movie is a quite a delightful story about whether he did all these adventures or not. And I know it's a favorite of yours, Matt. I know you've mentioned us doing it on the show a few times. And so we're going to throw it in there in the next week and talk Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, man. Martin Sheen. Got Christopher Walken, Tom Hanks, character actors, and it's going to be fun. You know, my mom worked in banking, and this guy changed the way they do things. She did tell me that.
Yeah, and interesting is that Tom Hanks almost wasn't in the movie. They were I can't remember who it was. It was someone else, and at the last minute, the other actor dropped out, and Spielberg called Tom, and basically Tom was like, okay, I'll do it. And he had like a week to prepare and got on set and made the movie.
Nice.
So, you know, so we'll talk about that. But Catch Me If You Can on next week's show. And thank you for listening, as always, the RebelRadioPodcast.com, of course, for all your Rebel Radio needs. And Happy New Year again to a safe and healthy and good 2023 for everybody. And we thank you for listening. And we hope you continue the journey with us on the show.
Yes.
And this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
And remember, as always, thanks for listening and just go there.
Just go there and do it.
Sam Jones, Flash Gordon, and this is Rebel Radio Podcast.